everyone. Another episode of Self-Directed Podcast. I am thrilled about today's guest, Mitchell Broderick, SVP of Client Development, Platform Marketing, and previously VP of Authority Marketing at Four Books Advantage Media. Before that, way back in the day, full disclosure, Mitch is a Praxis alumni, but not only is he an alumni, Mitch is the OG of Praxis alumni, very first customer from our very first class way back in the days now, 5+ years out of Praxis, well into a very successful career. Mitch Broderick, welcome to the Self-Directed Podcast.
Thank you, Mitchell. Yeah, it was a very long time ago, it seems.
Yeah. So just a couple of Mitches hanging out talking about career success. Mitch, you got to rewind it first and talk about kind of your backstory way back in the day. Like, what were you doing even before Praxis? Because the core of what I want to talk about today is your success story, your career story and journey, and the decisions you made to that led you to where you're at, which, you know, by any realistic measure, the way that society talks about your career path, like, you shouldn't be where you are today. You know, like, you didn't go to college, or you dropped out of college, and you still achieved astonishing success. So, like, talk me through the early backstory of, you know, how you were getting started.
Well, when I really think about it, one thing that I think separates me from a lot of people is early on in my career, I guess, you know, what you would call it. I really had one single goal. And a lot of people don't have this single goal, but my goal was to not be poor. That was just my absolute biggest goal. There's no, you know, nicer, more tactful way to put it. I just didn't want to be poor because I grew up pretty poor. My mom was single mother of all the children. I'm the youngest of four, and I watched her work her butt off, sometimes two jobs. And it, you know, I watched my siblings make a bunch of mistakes too, and they didn't really have a whole lot by the time I was coming out of high school. And I was like, you know, I don't want to set myself up to have that be like the primary focus of my life, of just like paying my bills. So my whole, I guess, high school career, the time I was in high school and what plans I was making for after, was all centered around basically skill building. A lot of it was just, I guess, like self, you know, I started with all the self-help books, business leaders, whatever that I could find. And I just had this inner stance that whatever I was going to do, because I never knew exactly the specifics, I had ideas of what I'd like to do. I was setting out on a path that would reach, you know, make me independently wealthy, which I'm not independently wealthy still, but I have achieved a good, you know, a good level of financial success.
Yeah. And on the path to it, at least you're closer to the goal than when you first started down the path.
Yeah. Indeed.
Yeah. So let's dig in. Like, what were you doing around that time in your life? Like, what kind of jobs were you working? How many jobs, you know, would you say did you have before you felt like you kind of started to figure things out?
Well, so my first job actually started in May of 2009 at Taco Bell. and that was just a tremendous opportunity to me. That was a tremendous opportunity. And I worked there for 3 years. I just thought it was the coolest, like, I don't know. I had a strange outlook on it. My thought was this billion-dollar company trusted me to represent their brand and interact with customers. So, you know, that like cliche of like, you're working at a fast food restaurant as a high schooler and you're like ashamed and you hide when other kids come in the store. That wasn't me. They come in the store and I've got my Taco Bell hat on and I'm adjusting and I'm saying, hi, how are you today? To all the, you know, all the other high schoolers. So I got fired from Taco Bell, because of shenanigans. I put Ron Paul 2012 on the marquee. and I bring that up. I mean, it's a pretty normal, I mean, I tell the story a lot, but it's important because that was actually one of the most important days of my life, was getting fired from Taco Bell, because at the time I was working 40 hours a week and I was training to become a shift manager and I was going to college. I was commuting to my local college, Northwood University. And that was, I was getting a degree in economics. That was the plan.
Yep.
Was I to keep going to college until I graduated and work full time at Taco Bell until I do it. Getting fired because of this impulsive shenanigan. I was going straight down the path and yep. just 90 degree turn. So from there, I kind of had some figuring out to do, and a lot of it, yeah. About 35 days later, I broke up with my girlfriend because I was gay. I dropped out of college about 2 weeks later. So in 60 days, a lot of big things happened in yeah. my life. And, you know, my family all looked at, you know, they all saw like this potential that Mitchell had.
Yeah.
And then less than a year out of high school, it looks like my life is just crumbling.
Yeah. yeah.
Right.
From everybody looking on the outside. Yeah.
Right. It looked like I was on a path of self-destruction. And I, you know, I can't blame them for thinking that. I never felt like that.
Yeah. That's what I was going to ask. Yeah. Like what's your emotional disposition during this time? Are you, you know, in spite of this pressure, are you like feeling more free every day, or, you know, like you hell bent that I'm going to figure it out. You know, what's going through your head?
I would say I was feeling more free every day. And emotionally I trusted in my ability to handle, you know, the obstacles that were coming my way. So then, after I left Taco Bell, I did get a job that started a month later at landscaping at the university I dropped out of for the summer, interestingly enough. And,
yeah.
and I also was it's waiting tables. Poetic. I started, oh yeah. And I also started waiting tables, at Applebee's. So that was my first time being a server. And being a server is tremendous. That is just such, you can make really good money as a server or a bartender.
Yeah.
If you're doing a good job, but there's also just there's so many skills that I learned while I was waiting tables that I still use today. And I think anybody should be a server if for a year or two, if they need any, you know, if they need cash or whatever, I'd do it again. I mean, in a heartbeat. Because basically you're an entrepreneur when you're a server. You get to hang your license with their brand, but you're making a commission on every table, and you have a fair amount of control over what commission you make from the yep. from the table. So anyway, I waited tables and I got my real estate license. I was a very mediocre realtor, but I had a couple of deals that succeeded that I went through. They were miserable for me to get through, but I closed them, which was a big deal for me because I was 19 and, you know, someone let me sell their $300,000 house. And I found them just cold. They let me come in their house. I was a kid and they were so impressed with me. They let me list their home and it ended up working out, but that was a big confidence booster. And it also
yep.
gave me the commission check I needed to put my down payment on Praxis when I eventually learned about Praxis shortly after. So basically I lived in Metro Detroit for about a year and a half or so, learning to sell real estate and waiting tables. And I knew that I would figure it out. My plan at the time was that I would sell real estate for long enough to save enough money to go back to college. So I still hadn't veered away from totally being an opt-out.
Yep.
Because part of me still wanted to get like an econ degree. After I met Isaac Morehouse at an SFL event, Students for Liberty event in Lansing, that kind of all changed because he told me about this idea, you know, for a company that he was launching called Praxis. And it was just exactly like it was exactly what I was looking for. And it took 2 minutes. I mean, not even for me to decide like I was doing that. And I had just moved in with my now husband. He was my boyfriend at the time. I just moved in with Tom that week. And I came home and I said, hey, I'm applying for this Praxis thing. And I think I'm going to move to Charleston, South Carolina. 3 months later, I was in Charleston. incidentally, I almost didn't do it. I got very nervous at the end of December, and I actually typed out the email to say, like, I can't do this. There's,
yep.
you know, I had all my reasons. I know how to back out of something like a pro, right?
Yep.
So, this would have been a very different life if I had sent that email.
Well, I'm glad you did. We, you know, chances are we wouldn't be having this conversation today, but also like you may be in an entirely different place. Talk to me a little bit about, you know, everything after that decision. Like landing your first job, the process of moving across the country, betting on yourself, and like figuring out how to land that first job and navigate it.
Yeah. So the process for getting like my business partnership with Advantage Media Group, that was my business partner whenever I did Praxis. They had me in an introductory or like a junior sales role. So I was interviewing to be like a BDR, or BD, they called it a BDC, but it, you know, whatever the name is, doesn't matter. And I essentially had to do 3 30-minute interviews and then, with other members of their leadership team, and then an hour-long interview with the CEO, Adam Witte, who's a very brilliant entrepreneur. And they were pretty rigid, as I recall. They were pretty rigid on those calls because they knew that the people that I'd be speaking to, as a sales rep, they were all going to be entrepreneurs. Yep. Either solo entrepreneurs,
like high-level CEOs, and people that
be,
you're,
yeah, they could whatever. Even be CEOs, yeah. But they were all serious business people, right? Yep. They weren't gonna walk all over you if you weren't able to handle yourself in a conversation. And they knew that, so that's why they were rigid with me, because they wanted to know how I would handle myself, especially the CEO on his interview with me. And I remember at the end of our interview, he asked me, or he said, "I really just wanted to find out a few things from you on this call," and I did find them all out. Those three things were: are you intelligent? Are you literate? Meaning he wanted to know if I'm reading and if I'm learning all the time, and can you handle yourself in an intellectual conversation, right? So those three things. And he says, "I found out all those things, and we're going to make the offer to you to bring you on as an intern, basically, or as a BDC." So
what age were you at this time, by the way?
20.
20. So I was 20. You're having these kind of conversations with the CEO of a pretty good, fast growing business at the time. Still,
they were a $3.5 million company or so whenever I went there, and they grew rapidly over the 3 or so years that I was there, with me as a part of the company. So I moved down to Charleston, early January 2014, and had 2 weeks of training. So I packed everything I had into my car. I had this Ford Focus that was a manual, like, piece of garbage, throwaway car. Everything I had, and that's not the first time I've moved with everything I had in that car. And, you know, I didn't even have a place to live when I moved here. I had a contact with a lady, or with a couple of girls that I found on Craigslist who might have had a room for me. And we literally, my husband and I drove, boyfriend at the time, but we drove down into Charleston. And as soon as we arrived in Charleston, it was like 11:30 in the morning. We met these girls at a Starbucks because we were supposed to sit down and get to know one another. And they didn't want me to live with them. So I didn't have a place to live. That was my only lead on a place to live.
Oh my gosh. How did you handle this? So like Airbnb wasn't even off the ground yet. Like, not a big deal.
Oh no. I went to a Motel 6. So I bought a week at a Motel 6, on Ashley Phosphate Road. A few years later, there was a murder there. I didn't care. I mean, it was a bed to sleep in while I started training. And so for the first week and a half, I was living in a Motel 6. And then I did find on Craigslist a girl who said, "Females only, I have a room for you." And I'm like, "Oh, I got to try it." So my email said, "I'm not a female, but I'm gay." And then I went on with my story, and she called me because I left my number in there, and she called me, and she just basically told me she laughed so hard that she thought, "Oh, this is the guy." So I lived in that room. It was just a small bedroom in a duplex for 3 months until my husband decided to quit his job and move down, and we got an apartment together down here. So that was
talk about pushing all your chips in to make it work.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. And I was, at the time, I was like, you know, but by the time he moved down, I was 21, and it's like, he just moved down, quit his, like, he had a $60,000 sales job with Pepsi, and like, he quit that job and moved down for this kid who was making $10 an hour, 30 hours a week, in Charleston. I'm like, what a, crazy guy. I'm going to keep it PG.
Yeah. Awesome. So what next? You started out, you get the job offer. You start entry level, kind of the bottom of the totem pole. Where'd it go from there?
Well, I really sucked at first. So my job was specifically to do cold emailing. So cold emailing, cold calling, but basically just outbound prospecting, trying to get people who are interested in doing a qualification call, which is supposed to be theoretically like a 15 or 20 minute call to tell them about what we do. And if they're interested in a more in-depth discussion and they learn about pricing and everything, then I set up a discovery call with like the VP, right? So that was my job, was literally to do qualification calls and book discovery calls for the real salesperson, right?
Yep.
And I got to tell you, I was terrible at it at first. It was just not going anywhere. And they actually hired a whole bunch of sales reps. At the same time they brought me on, I was just one of the people that fit into their plan of hiring. And I was very clearly the youngest person, the only one who didn't have a degree, and everyone else was like older than 30. So like they were older than me by like a decade. And what helped me is that the people who were in my role that were older than me, they struggled too. So that was at least good that there was, you know, they were struggling. What I've come to learn now is that's to be expected. Like if you just start a sales rollout, you're not going to hit the ground running.
And it's like a tough job.
Month, you have to build a pipeline.
Yeah.
You have to learn how to have the conversations, which unfortunately means you have to really screw up a lot of conversations first. But the other thing they really did for me that was awesome is immediately when I started there, like on day one, they were giving me Sandler sales training. So they had paid for it.
It's my favorite.
Sandler sales trainer that we went to every single week. And actually the guy who specifically ran my class is one of my best friends still today. You know, we have Thanksgiving and New Year's we celebrate together. It's just great relationship there. And that is just invaluable because that is some really expensive high-end sales training that I got for like $300 a month for 10 months, which is what Praxis cost me. So that was pretty awesome. It's paying dividends. So anyway, I wasn't doing very well. I was still booking calls and everything. I wasn't doing very well. And I even like had Isaac Morehouse drive out and have lunch with me like in May of that year, because it was like 4 months. Like I had a really tough conversation with the CEO, who was my boss at the time, where he basically said, like, if we don't turn things around in 30 days, we might have to have a really uncomfortable adult conversation. Right. And I don't like take failure in that capacity very well. There are things I wasn't good at growing up. A lot of those were like sports related, but like this was in a sense, this was like just like intelligence related. And I'm like, I know how to do all this. Why am I sucking? So I met with Isaac and just had like a come to Jesus talk with him. And I don't know, there was like some magic in that conversation, both with Adam Witte, the CEO, and with Isaac Morehouse, and everything turned around after that. And I started crushing it. And it was so good, or I did so well, that at the end of Praxis, I basically felt like my position at the company, the position itself, was irrelevant. Like it was redundant. It didn't need to happen. I felt like the VP could do everything themselves.
Yep.
And actually shorten the sales process. And the longer your sales process is, the more places somebody can back out, right? So the harder it is to close. So I'm like, well, people don't need to do qualification calls. You can just turn it into a discovery call when you realize they're qualified. So I actually started doing that and selling the first step and taking credit cards from people instead of booking the discovery call. And I did that because I knew Praxis was ending and I wanted the promotion. And I was basically had a feeling that I'm either going to do this and get the promotion, or I'm going to do this and they're going to fire me.
Yep.
And in any case, I'm comfortable with either option. So I did that, and Praxis ended, and they said, well, Mitchell, do you think you can handle the job if we promote you and we're going to eliminate the BDC? And I felt very comfortable that I could. And so I got the promotion at the end of Praxis to vice president of business development. At the time, it changed over time what they wanted to call it based on what their marketing aim was. But
That's an incredible story. I love that you just continuously up the ante. I continued to be like, no, I'm just going to bet on myself. It's, you know, I'm going to figure it out one way or the other. So in this next year is in this role, there's an awesome statistic that I'm going to throw out because I know your story, but there's a fun one. It's like only 17% of companies in the country generate $1 million in sales a year. And you did it by yourself in that next year, right?
Yeah. So every year that I was with Advantage, I sold $1 million or just over roughly $1 million in marketing packages, book packages, whatever. As far as like my whole sales, you know, tally was supposed to go, which was, I mean, pretty cool because it is very, like most businesses don't achieve $1 million in sales.
You're 21 and you're doing it by yourself.
To do it. Yeah. And I was handsomely rewarded for it too.
So was it at that point in time where you started to feel like, man, sales is the career path for me. I've got this thing figured out. I've got kind of my trajectory figured out, or were you still trying to discover it?
I knew pretty quickly that sales was the right route. Yeah. It doesn't, you know, it matters. So it matters to me what company I sell for and what I'm selling. But mm-hmm. all in all, I know that I'm very comfortable having a conversation with somebody about making a purchase.
Yeah.
And if I can get paid to do that, then I'm a very happy guy.
Do it all day. Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. So where's your career go from there? Let's talk about kind of the next steps. You moved into a different role the road with Advantage and all of this.
So Advantage grew tremendously over the next several years. They founded a joint venture with the brand, the Forbes brand, with Forbes Books, which is basically it is different, but it's a higher end version of what Advantage was already doing, which was basically helping entrepreneurs write and publish books and utilize it as a marketing tool. Forbes Books just brought this amazing PR, infrastructure with them for people who wanted to pay more money. So that was really cool, a really great opportunity. One thing I'll just admit here is I actually did not like the direction that the company was taking. So I disagreed with some leadership decisions and I just had a different mindset about what we were doing. And it was really stressing me out. This is something that you'll understand. I really don't do things I hate for very long.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was kind of, you know, I had my pulse on, you know, all right, what's next? What's my backup plan? And I did some kind of a rant, I think, on Facebook. It might have been vague, but some people who knew me would have understood what it was. And so one of my friends, Tim Shermack, reached out to me and he's like, hey, I saw that you're kind of frustrated at Advantage. And you know, I kind of want to talk to you. So we got on the phone and started talking about his company, Platform Marketing, which I had actually signed up as a client for as a realtor, before all this a few times because I was thinking about leaving Advantage and just going into doing real estate.
Yep.
And then I quit because I didn't end up doing that. So I actually signed up and bailed on Tim Shermack two times, before he reached out and I signed up to, well, not signed up, but I joined Platform to actually come on and grow the company. So he basically said, hey, I'd really like to talk to you about coming to join Platform and helping me scale this company. Here's where we are now. Here's what I'd like to do. What do you think you can do? So we kind of, well, really, we negotiated a really awesome way to do that in a mutually beneficial way. So now I've been at Platform for 3 years. The company has, I mean, it's tripled in revenue. At one point we've taken a hit, but at one point it's quadrupled in revenue over the course of 3 years, and we're month to month service for realtors. So I not only have to make a sale, I have to make a sale to somebody in such a way that they want to remain clients for as long as possible. Not just sign up for like a month or two and quit, which realtors are people who do that.
Yeah.
So that's not all me, so I don't want to take all that. Our company is really good at what we do. So our account managers and our ads, they all work very hard and they work very well. But getting the person to sign up is the first step.
Yep. That's awesome. So how do you think about your career now in terms of, you know, you've done a lot, very short, you know, not super short, I guess. But how do you think about your career now? Are you successful by, you know, your own metrics?
Well, I am. I think about it in, I've been very reflective over the last few years because I've been very happy, not just pushing and pushing. I mean, I push in my job to make sales and everything, but I kind of have taken this, I want to look around me now kind of approach to life, instead of just pushing for what's next. And I've been very pleased. I've grown a lot of really deep relationships over the last several years, and have really put down roots. When I look at my career moving into the future, I don't see myself leaving Platform. In fact, we're deepening that relationship in many ways. I see myself, I've kind of said it this way. For a very long time, I knew not exactly what I was going to do, but for a very long time, I knew what the future entailed for me. And after I made the transition to Platform and then proved that it could be successful moving, yep, so that, you know, Advantage Media Group and my success there wasn't a fluke, basically. Because that was one thing that I was like, could be perfectly realistic, is I moved to this new company thinking, yep, that I have all these skills that are valuable, and then I just bomb and embarrass, yep, myself, right? And that didn't happen, thankfully. So once that was kind of, you know, a year or so in, these last couple of years, it's been really much more about looking around, just kind of enjoying my life, letting things happen, which is the first time in my life that I've ever felt that way, where I haven't felt like this pressure to push harder. And I don't know if that's the jury's out. I don't know if that's a healthy way for me to look at life right now, to be comfortable, yeah, and just enjoying it or not, but it sure feels good. And I know that I have it within me to turn on the other switch when I need to, or if I need to.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I want to bring this all home with just one last question. If you could give yourself, you know, at the start of this journey with what you know now, if you today could give yourself at the start of this journey some words of encouragement or advice, you know, what would you say to 18, 19 year old you?
I don't know. See, those questions are always so weird for me. Cause I mean, there's nothing I would say. I have no animosity about how anything has happened. I mean, it's been very rewarding and enlightening for me. I am never good with that question of like, if I could go and change something or tell myself something. I mean, the dumb answer is to buy Bitcoin in 2011 and sell it in 2018.
Which would have been very profitable.
That would have been a very big deal. So I don't know. There's not a thing. I'm content with how everything has turned out. I wouldn't change it.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I think you've reached a point that a lot of people struggle with, and many people never even find it. So congratulations and kudos to you. Mitch, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for sharing your story. This has been another episode of the Self-Directed Podcast. We'll be back again soon.